The following podcast may contain mature themes and coarse language. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the No Fear Friday edition of the No Fear Project podcast. I'm your host, Pete D'Amico. The theme of fear of change continues today as we talk with Therese. We intended to talk mostly about her fears during a job change, especially in the coronavirus era, and that evolved into so much more. We talk about inertia in a job, the fear of changing roles, the balance of family during this pandemic, the role of running in an online tribe, and more. This one was good for my soul. I hope it is for you as well. We will hear all that Therese has to say right after this quick word from our sponsor, Silver Fox Athletics. If you are anything like me, you have big goals. I really wanted to become a better runner, and you guessed it, fear was stopping me. I needed a running coach. Enter Coach Andy in Silver Fox Athletics. I started working with Coach Andy and he produced the perfect customized training plan. His plan and support were just what I needed. The fear started melting away instantly. I ended up with a shiny new personal record in the half marathon and even conquered my biggest running fear of all, the 26.2-mile marathon. Coach Andy specializes in those middle and back of the pack runners like me, and even those that have never run much. Get more information about Silver Fox Athletics at silverfoxathletics.org. Also, follow Silver Fox Athletics on Instagram. While you are there, click book to get your free initial consultation with Coach Andy. Make sure to tell him you heard about Silver Fox on the No Fear Project. All right, now we are back over for our conversation with Therese. Welcome to the No Fear Project.
Thanks, Pete. It's great to be here. So excited.
Yeah, it's awesome. Why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself, give a little background, and then we'll get into some talk.
Sure. So I live in Eastern Pennsylvania with my husband and two girls, and they're in elementary school. And I know you through my running life, member of the Sub 30 Club. And I have I recently changed jobs. I work in finance. And that's kind of it in a nutshell.
Nice. Yeah. So we've got a pandemic going on and you're in the middle of a job change. So
yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. So I used to work for a small insurance company. I worked in internal audit for over 10 years. And then last summer, right around about this time, I found out that they would no longer be needing an internal audit department. But I received a few months' notice. So I was told that my position would be eliminated in October. So then, as the summer went on and as fall started, I started looking for a new job. And then I received an offer the middle of December, so right before Christmas. And I started with my new place just after the holidays in early January. And so that is with a electronic manufacturing company. And I work in the finance department.
So when that job of 10 years comes to you, what's going through your mind is they're telling you, hey, you know, we don't really need you anymore.
Yeah, it was. And actually, it was expected. And it was expected for a very long time because about 10 years ago, the company entered a period of financial instability. So I always knew that the writing was on the wall. It was just a matter of when and how and kind of what was going to happen. But the good thing about working for an insurance company that is not doing well is that it takes a very long time for it to run out because they still need to take care of their policyholders. So as long as people are paying premiums, they will still take care of claims and pay out benefits. So for a very long time, it was business as usual. You know, I was doing internal audit work and year after year, you know, passed by. It wasn't until probably 2017-ish when they started talking about that essentially the end was coming. And looking ahead and what I was hearing from my supervisor and the CFO, I kind of expected that they would not need internal audit. But at that point, I kind of felt like I was in it and I had been in the company for so long, I would kind of see it until the end. So, but it was still a difficult, even though it was expected, it was still a very difficult discussion, and it was a difficult time for sure.
So change is forced upon you.
And yes.
We have a post in No Fear About the Fear of Change, and that's what prompted our discussion today. So how did that fear start to manifest for you?
In looking back on my past 10 years as an auditor, I didn't want to be an internal auditor long term. That was never part of my goal. I actually, when I entered the company, I was in their financial reporting department. And as part of this financial instability, they asked me to move over to internal audit. So I did that. But I didn't think it was going to be a permanent change. Like, I thought I'd be able to get back into financial reporting or to move into some other sort of finance role, which is what I wanted. But when I found out about the change, that was when I was pregnant with my first daughter. And then, you know, you have a newborn, and then less than a year later, I'm pregnant again, and then again, another newborn. So I became very comfortable in the position. And I think that's what was part of the fear of change. I was afraid to put myself out there. I was afraid to go through an interview process. I was afraid, I wasn't sure that another company would want me. Like, it was just kind of all of this uncertainty and fear that kept me in the position for 10 years. And in hindsight, I probably should have left about 3 to 5 years before I actually did, but I was too afraid to make that jump, you know, too afraid to put myself out there.
I can understand that. I mean, with a family, you've got an income, right? You've already got chaos at home because kids equal chaos. And right. So you've already got enough to do there to keep all that stuff moving along smoothly. And then to add a job change in, I get that. That's not easy at all. Does that fear manifest anywhere else in your life, or is it mostly in the professional side?
I'd say it was mostly in the professional side, but I also found myself, because I wasn't fully motivated with the job, I found myself looking elsewhere for motivation. And that is kind of where running comes in and why I did focus so much time and energy on not just running, but on sub 30 and kind of everything I've done surrounding that. Like, that was my motivation. So that's where my creativity went. And then the job was the job because, and since I had done it for so long, you know, it was almost second nature. So yeah, I mean, that's where my motivation ended up going.
Can you tell, we really haven't talked a lot about sub 30. It's been referenced a few times on the show, but we haven't really talked about it. Why don't you tell everyone what that's about?
Sure. So Sub 30 was started by a guy named Ted, who was a blogger for Runner's World. And as part of his blog back in April of 2012, he put this post out there saying, hey, I have this goal that I think will help me feel like help me move from the back of the pack to a little closer to the middle of the pack. And to him, that goal was running a 5K in under 30 minutes. So that's where sub 30 comes from. And he put it out there and he was like, if there's anybody else who has this goal or anybody else who wants to support people with this goal, let me know. And maybe we could put together an email chain. So this post goes up and within, you know, a very short period of time, he had something like 100 responses. So he's like, okay, an email's not going to work. So he created the Sub 30 Club Facebook group, which has now expanded into multiple subgroups, but it's grown. And right now we have, last I checked, it was well over 6,500 members, but it's not just people working towards a sub 35K. It's anything from somebody trying to break 20 minutes in the 5K, or somebody trying to break 40 or 50 or 60 minutes in the 5K, or people running marathons, people training for Boston, people trying to qualify for Boston, people running ultra marathons. It really, people of all goals and abilities and interests, that really the common theme is positivity, support, and motivation. And so we kind of support everybody regardless of what their goals are.
Yeah, what I see a lot in there too is people that have a fear that maybe they're not really a runner, or they're not really an athlete, coming forward and having a forum to say, you know, hey, I'm out here doing this. And there are so many posts. The one thing I wish I could change about sub 30 is people could stop apologizing for their pace. You know, like, I know this is slow, but I got to, you know, a 48 minute 5K. That's fantastic, because that's your PR, and overcoming the fear of just moving, especially those of us who are bigger, and there's a huge contingent of no pun intended, of bigger of bigger people, right, in sub 30 that are overcoming the fear of the stigma of exercising at a larger size. So it really is an amazing, positive place, and you were a part of that leadership team, and like you said, put a lot of energy there. So how did that help you kind of couch? Well, you already talked about where you put your energy, but how did it help overcome any kind of fears that you were having around change or any other aspect? Was there any of that going on?
I think the thing that I love about the club is the community aspect. I'm a former cross country runner. And when I was running cross country, I wouldn't necessarily describe myself as being a super dedicated runner. It really was the social aspect of the team that I loved, because it gave me that smaller group of individuals within the school that we just kind of had that common bond of that we happened to run. So when I returned to running after my girls were born, and I was kind of on my own weight loss journey, when I found sub 30, like, that was the first time kind of as an adult that I found that sense of community and that team aspect. So that's kind of what drives me to, or that's what drove me to want to participate more and to help out and to help organize events or get togethers or whatever. It just kind of became that outlet as an adult, because, you know, I'm kind of bored, essentially bored by my job. And you have that, you know, chaotic kid experience, as we were talking about. And then, but the running, that was just for me, you know, even though it's kind of this larger group and, you know, there's that aspect, but essentially it was something that I was doing for me. And it was a way to, I don't know, almost refine my identity as an adult with this team, you know, virtual, but at the same time together, you know.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Did you have good support from your husband during that time, getting back into running there?
Yeah, I did, because he's also a former cross-country runner, so he kind of got the running thing. There definitely have been some times where, especially training for, I guess, my first half marathon, your life does change a little bit and your focuses. And then all of a sudden you have to get up every weekend, either on Saturday or Sunday, to run. And there was definitely times throughout, the past few years where, you know, he's been like, okay, I just need you to also help focus on some stuff here at home too. So it's become we figured out ways that we can balance it so that, you know, I can do my running and training for the longer events. And he also runs too. So I make sure that, you know, he feels like he can still get his runs in too. But yeah, there's definitely been times where we've had to figure out how to kind of merge the two schedules and get everything done that we both want to do, you know, family and running.
Do you ever feel guilt while you're out there doing a long run that you're being too selfish?
I don't necessarily feel guilty while I'm running. It's more if I take a step back and realize that sometimes it's not just the run. It's, you know, you got to go to bed early so you can wake up early so you can get ready so you can do the run. And then you come home and then you're starving and then you got to shower. And, you know, it's kind of that all of that extra time on either side of the run that I really try to be careful about. And it's one of the reasons why, for the most part, I just do half marathons, because I've done enough half marathons that I'm pretty comfortable with the time that's needed to do it. And Jason has been supportive of all three of my marathons, but it was definitely a lot more time that was away from the family that, you know, he had to pick up some slack. And for my first marathon, the girls were still pretty young. So, you know, he was basically doing this solo dad thing every Saturday morning for a number of hours with I think they were 2 and 4 at the time, or 3 and 5, whatever, but they were pretty young at the time. So it's a little better now that they're older, but still, like, that's kind of why I'm careful with what I register for.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because I've had a lot of work to do, a lot of work where I didn't feel selfish, but I understand where it's self-care. And it wasn't that Gretchen, you know, was telling me that this is too much. It was more in my mind, like, what am I missing? You know, it was really difficult for me too, and not having my older two kids with me all the time, when I would be in training cycles where I'd have to try to count out the number of weeks so that when I had them, to make sure I wasn't taking too much time away. It really is a balancing act that extends into, you know, help me get better about how I looked and viewed real, kind of real life, if you will. I feel like the running life still for me is almost like fantasy land when I'm out there, because your mind can go wherever it wants. But when it comes down to work and home, it helped me kind of reprioritize or get better at prioritizing those aspects, because I knew I wanted to go accomplish the running piece.
Yeah.
And I'm a psycho, and I've gone longer than marathon now. So.
Yeah, I mean, solo in your neighborhood.
Right,
especially.
Exactly.
Yeah, I remember a couple conversations with Jason, one of which, I think it was around, I don't know if it was my first half or my first full, it was something somewhere around there. So this is going back a few years ago. And Jason was kind of doing a lot of the weekly or the weekend grocery shopping. And I don't know, I must have said something to him like, oh, well, I can help you if you want. And he's like, this is kind of like the equivalent of my running time. And then it kind of clicked, like, oh, right. Like, this is when he is away, you know, by himself doing something for, you know, it's still obviously for the family because he's buying groceries, but it was kind of that moment, like, okay, we need to make sure that that continues.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, let's circle back around a little bit, because I want to get back to the job. I could talk running for, you know, ever.
True.
So circling back around, though, so you changed jobs. After 10 years in the same organization, what were your feelings going into something new?
It was terrifying. Yeah, it was absolutely terrifying. I had gotten so comfortable at my last job. I was comfortable, not just what I was doing, but I was comfortable with the people. And kind of my biggest worry about, you know, when I was in the interview process and kind of looking forward, was I had the feeling like, oh my gosh, I'm starting over and I need to completely, prove myself again as, you know, a good employee and a good person, even, you know, just kind of that feeling of starting over was definitely terrifying. And in the interview process with the company that I'm with now, they kind of have a long drawn out process with multiple steps and everything. And I kept worrying, like, are they really interested in me? Like, do they really want me? Like, this is a good company with a good reputation. And I just didn't feel like I was good enough to work for them. But then I kind of, in talking to some friends and thinking through it, I kind of realized, like, they're interviewing me, but more importantly, I'm interviewing them. And I needed to make sure that I wanted to work for them and that I appreciated what they stood for. And it just kind of that subtle shift kind of built my confidence up a little bit for the rest of the interview process. But it's still, and so, yeah, so I started early January, and a little over 2 months later is when Pennsylvania kind of went into the work from home order. So I was in the office for, I think, a little over 10 weeks. And so now I've been with them longer from home. So because I haven't been in the office at all since mid-March. I know.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So it's been, I actually have lost track. I'm not sure how many weeks we've been home at this point, 13 or 14 or something. So, I mean, even still, I have that feeling of, am I good enough to be with this group and with this company? Just the kind of that lingering worry from during the interview process and going through all of that.
Does that kind of self-doubt hit you anywhere else in life?
Technically it can hit anywhere, everywhere, you know, there's doubts whether I'm, you know, a good enough wife, you know, doubts whether I'm a good enough mom. You know, my daughter she's going to be 11 next week. And so we're approaching some very terrifying years.
That's for sure.
Right. So, you know, whether that's good enough, and she's going into a new school, and, you know, even with my youngest, as she gets older, like there's fears there. And then even of course with running, you know, or am I, you know, a good enough runner? Like, am I doing what I want to do? But so, yeah, I mean that, I think you've touched on it, if not in the group, definitely on a podcast about kind of like that imposter phenomenon.
Yeah. Imposter phenomenon. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I feel that in every regards.
Yeah, it's interesting because I always find that fascinating because I think some people have these segmented fears where they feel it in one aspect of their life and it doesn't carry over. Whereas I think more similar to you that it's a little too universal at times, right? So what are some of the strategies that you've used to overcome the fear?
I think part of it is even when I'm worried or afraid about something, like I still kind of have that thinking of, you know, I'm here, in here being kind of a broad term, like I'm here for a purpose, whether it be work. Like, you know, I went through the interview process. They believe that I can do what I can do. So I need to believe that I can do it too. You know, so it's kind of that self-belief. And then, you know, even with family, like, you know, I sometimes look around and like wondering where the adult is, and it's like, oh yeah, that's right, it's me. So, you know, like I need to act like the adult, and I need to make those decisions, and I need to stick to those decisions, and I need to kind of accept those decisions. And then same thing with running, like, you know, I do the best that I can. And you know, the thing with running is because it's completely optional, you know, there's kind of, you can kind of, I find that I can kind of relieve myself a little bit of that pressure sometimes because it's like, whoa, this is supposed to be fun, you know? So it's kind of step back and kind of enjoy the process. So, yeah.
Yeah. I love the mind shift of how you are interviewing, like while you're in interviews, you're really interviewing them. I think that shift alone has to help overcome fear just because you can't be fearful in that situation because you're the one in the position of power, if you will.
Right. I mean, that's true. Absolutely. And I think that feeling that just gave me, even if it was more an external feeling, like it gave me that feeling of being able to relax a little bit. And because we did a couple rounds of like phone interviews, and then we had the in-person interview, which was over the course of a few hours with multiple people and everything. But it kind of, you know, that realization of I'm interviewing these people and this company. And yeah, I think it definitely helped with the confidence and made me relax, at least externally, a little bit, in order to ask the questions and get the information that I needed to get from them.
And this may be a tricky question because I know you're so new into the job, but just in general, Do you think that this experience and kind of being forced to have to get out there and go through this kind of a change, if you did find yourself in a rut again in a job, do you think you would have a better opportunity to kind of urge yourself to go look without having been forced to?
I think so. Sorry, my cat is joining
hi,
us.
Kitty.
Yeah. Hey, that's Weasley. so I think so.
Oh, redhead cat. I got it now. Sorry.
Yeah. The one good thing about the company I'm at now is they're a lot larger than my last company, which means there's so many more opportunities. I mean, because one of the problems I had at the last company was I couldn't move to something else because there was literally no position for me to move to. Whereas here, it's very, and I've been told this kind of from the beginning, and I've seen it in talking to people, that it's very, what's the phrase I'm looking for? Like, self-directed in terms of what you want to do and how you want your career to look. So say in a year or two, I'm like, okay, I have a very good understanding of this position. I want to learn another position within the finance department. I could talk to them and we can see if we can move into that other department. And it happens a lot. I mean, I know that there's my supervisor has been with the company for over 10 years and she's had 9 different positions.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so part of that was company directed, like, you know, they'll come to people with opportunities. And part of it was her, that she was expressing an interest in certain things. And so she was able to move. So I really, that was one of the things I really liked about the company, is that opportunity for growth and change within the same organization.
Yeah, that kind of cross-functional expertise cannot be overstated, right? I have been in organizations that have that and also have wanted to pigeonhole people both. And I mean, there is something really to be said about having the opportunity to go beyond where you're at and bring each department or each, you know, little role with you, because then you can understand and bridge the gap. And it's interesting. I mean, just a quick aside, I read a book not long ago about how being a generalist really is optimal. And that's where I'm at. I don't have like this really deep, specific knowledge base, like of something like finance, or what I'll use Gretchen as an example. You know, she's a senior director of FP&A, so financial planning and analysis. And I don't have that skill, right? But I'm really good at talking to the person in FP&A and the person in sales and getting them to understand what that bridge that gap, right? Where they're not hearing each other. And,
right,
you know, that kind of soft skill isn't always looked for in a company, but when you have that cross-functional opportunity, it kind of happens naturally. So
right.
I really think that's awesome. That's, you got to feel pretty good about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I am super excited about it. And I just lost my train of thought. just kind of how, it can be, like, I think what I really liked was that it was kind of, it can be employee driven. And one of the comments that one of the people who interviewed me had mentioned was, he said, we're not always necessarily just interviewing for the posted position. You know, we're interviewing for future development within the department. So that kind of like made me feel a little better too, because it's like, okay, well, they can see that, you know, I have all of this other background, which could be useful, even if it's not in this particular position.
It sounds like a really good culture overall. I mean, I know you're really new into that, but are you seeing that type of positive culture permeate the rest of the organization?
Yeah, definitely. And especially, you know, life in the time of a pandemic, I mean, you kind of learn what the top brass really thinks when forced with a pandemic, and kind of how they approached that. And as, because we do have a global footprint, so we were hearing things from other parts of the corporation. And so at the headquarters here in Pennsylvania, they kind of knew what was coming and they started preparing. And I think they even started preparing well before the employees even realized that they were preparing. And, you know, initially we were going to try an alternating schedule type situation, but then because of how quickly everything happened here in Pennsylvania, they essentially said, okay, everybody, you know, work from home. We're going to, figure out how we're going to manage this. And they've been super supportive and super, frequent communications, emails, all sorts of things that, we know that they are definitely, not just talk in terms of what they're willing to do for not just the customers, but also for the employees too.
That's fantastic. Have they given an indication if work from home will be more prevalent going forward, or if they want to get everybody back in?
I think they would like to get everybody back in some capacity. What that's going to look like, months or a year from now, I'm not sure. I know that our part of Pennsylvania kind of goes to the next phase, or we're using like this color phase, so the green phase. We move to that phase in like another week or two. And I think at that point they can start to bring more people back in. But it sounds like it'll still be, only 1 to 2 days per week for the people who work out kind of in the open areas of the floor. People with offices, they can be in the office a little more often since they can kind of close their door and kind of already be separate from other people.
What would be your preference?
I think basically a mix. Like I would like a couple days in the office and a couple days at home. I think, although it's been interesting because before this, I would have said that I'm much more productive in the office, but when forced with having to work from home for so many weeks, you get that productivity back, even in creative ways, so my time, I'm still working 8 hours, but it might be kind of spread out over a longer period of time just because of girls and lunch and my runs and kind of all that, managing all of that stuff, just a different type of productivity. But I definitely do want to get some time back in the office just so I'm focused and kind of forced to be there. I think that will be good. Plus, it'd be good to see people again that I haven't seen in 3.5 months.
Right?
Yeah.
After only knowing him for like 10 weeks. So,
right. Yeah, exactly.
How are your girls handling all this change?
They've been really good. They adapted really well to the online learning, although I can't really call it online learning. I mean, the way that our school district did it, we would receive a weekly lesson plan on a Monday, and then they basically had until Friday to complete it. And the first week we kind of sat down and worked it all out together and, to make sure they understood what they needed to do and everything. But really after that, they just kind of took it and ran because they were in fifth and third. So they were pretty self-sufficient. They would log on and do the reading minutes and do the math minutes and do the writing prompts and the Google Classroom things. But they were really good. Yeah, we were lucky.
Yeah, I don't think anything replaces in-person learning, especially with younger kids. I mean, between the face-to-face that the teachers get and the social aspect, I don't think you can replace that. But there was a couple things in this that you kind of alluded to. One is that kids are incredibly resilient. Mm-hmm. And two, they can be self-sufficient when we give them the opportunity. A lot of them, not everyone. Like I understand all kids are different, but when given the opportunity, so many of them can be. What's been interesting to me, I got my MBA online, fully online. And it was a very similar process. You would have assignments. You would have till a certain day to get them complete. You had to log in at a certain time to have discussion points and have discussions about a topic, which kind of relates to reading time or math time or writing time. And we were trusted. And so I think to me, one of the great things to come out of this is maybe we'll kind of show these kids that we do have more trust in them. Because I think that a lot of times they feel like we don't as parents. And we've kind of been forced to say, hey, we kind of trust you at this point. So I don't know if you saw the same types of things or are in agreement or not. But
no, I am. Yeah. And not just with schoolwork either, because even stuff around the house, like I'm learning that oh, they do really want to help out. You know, whereas before we've been so busy with, you know, so we pick them up from school and they'd be home for a little bit and we got to get the homework done. And then we have soccer practice or then we have dance practice and, you know, we're kind of running them all around. And then Jason and I are trying to do everything around the house in the times that we can. Whereas now that we're home, they're actually coming to us and being like, can I help with dinner? You know, so, which is great, you know, so then, you know, we're teaching them how to prepare some food or even help tidy up around the house that we didn't necessarily give them that responsibility before because there just wasn't time, you know. Right. But I definitely – and the thing with Leah, so she goes to middle school next year, which – so I think having the past couple of months, her being – kind of responsible for her work will help in middle school since she'll have more teachers and more assignments. And I think in a way that was almost better than if she was in class, you know, with the teacher kind of walking them through everything themselves. So yeah, like you said, like there's definitely been some positives out of it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess I just always project myself, you know, as a 10 or 11 year old, I would have just been lazy and wanting to play baseball all the time. So, Mom, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know,
or just
most
play
kids
outside with the neighbors.
Yeah, exactly.
Which you weren't supposed to do anyway.
Right. Yeah. Well, this has been great. Anything else that you wanted to share with us before we wrap it up? Anything else you wanted to talk about or discuss?
I don't think so. I think we covered more than I thought we would cover. So yeah, it's been great. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for coming on. We'll talk soon.
All right. Sounds good.
There was so much to that conversation. Thank you again to Therese for coming on and sharing. As I talk to more people, I'm realizing fear of change is at the heart of so much of our lives. Hearing from others helps us to understand that we are not alone and there are ways to cope, overcome, and conquer. As we wrap up this episode, I want to thank our patrons, especially our producers, Dave Asilvia, the Money, Motivation, and Motherhood podcast, and the Endurance for Everyone podcast. Your continued support is humbling. And as always, remember, the way forward is together. The time to conquer is now.
Thank you for listening to the No Fear Project. Original music is from Josh and Dean. Join us on social media by searching The No Fear Project on Facebook and Instagram. Check out thenofearproject.com for more information, including in-person presentations on fear customized for your organization. The No Fear Project is committed to helping those with mental illness get help and to defeating the stigma. If you have any thoughts of harming yourself or suicide, please contact the Suicide Prevention Hotline for help now at 800-273-8255. Remember, you are not alone. The No Fear Project is a production of Paragon Media, all rights reserved.